All right, Alexander, let's talk about the military situation in Ukraine, because it is the military situation that is driving all of the diplomacy, if you want to call it diplomacy, the negotiations, if you want to call it negotiations, the panic out of the collective West, the deep state, the neocons, the Europeans. It is everything that is happening on the front lines that is causing all of this this reaction and this chaos and this frantic push to try and get some sort of a deal between between Ukraine and Russia, the United States and Russia. So the situation on the front line is going from bad to worse with each passing day. Even Driscoll, the U.S. Army Secretary, is acknowledging the fact that Ukraine cannot win, that there will be an imminent defeat, his words, that's a direct quote, an imminent defeat of Ukraine. He also said that that Russia outproduces, continues to outproduce the West. And he said that that the U.S. cannot provide the weapons that Ukraine is asking for in order to keep up with Russian military production. Very interesting statements from Driscoll, admissions from Driscoll.
Absolutely. And bear in mind, he's a Pentagon official. I mean, he is in the Pentagon. He presumably gets all of the intelligence from the Defense Intelligence Agency and whoever. And he's right. I mean, everything that he said is true. And we'll go over the military situation shortly. But when Driscoll tried to explain this to the Europeans, the European ambassadors and diplomats in Kiev, after he met with Zelensky in Yermak, the Europeans were furious. They said, you know, one European official said it was repugnant listening to all of this. And we now know that Driscoll was supposed to come to a meeting in London, and apparently the atmosphere was so hostile to him that he decided to call off the visit, because, again, the Europeans didn't want to hear this, and the British in particular didn't want to hear this. It's extraordinary the extent to which people in the West still want to live in their world of illusion, because that's what it is clearly now becoming. Let's just do a quick roundup of what the situation is on the front lines. I mean, in some ways, even more critical now than Donbass, and perhaps the even bigger source of the panic is that it's now looking increasingly as if the entire Ukrainian position in Zaporozhye is now rapidly collapsing. So shortly before we started making this program, reports started to circulate that the Russians have begun to storm the town of Guliapolye in southern Zaporozhye region. Now, it's not a huge place. I think it's about 15,000 people before the war. I mean, it's famous. It's famous in Russian history and Ukrainian history for all sorts of reasons. It's also got, it's also been involved in literature and all that. So it's a place that people in Russia and people in Ukraine would have heard of. And of course, if it falls, then it opens the way for the Russians to advance rapidly westwards towards the city of Zaporozhye itself, because there are no major obstacles in the way. There are no great fortified lines or prepared positions to hold the Russians back west of Guliapolye. There is just one other town, Orekhov. The Russians have already reached Orekhov. They've surrounded it from the south and from the east. They captured recently a village called Malaya Tokmatska, which is basically a suburb of Orekhov itself. Orekhov also is not a big place. If the Russians capture all of these places, reach from the east Zaporozhye, they're already very close to Zaporozhye from the south. If they reach these Zaporozhye city from the east, Zaporozhye city, most of it is on the east bank of the Dnieper. The Russians can cut off the supplies from west, from the west bank, because the supplies would have to come across bridges, and it would be impossible to do that. It would be either the Ukrainians would decide to try to defend the city of Zaporozhye, in which case it would be another cauldron and they would be trapped there, or they would have to abandon Zaporozhye. Zaporozhye is one of the biggest cities in Ukraine. I believe it had a pre-war population of around 800,000. Some people say more. It's a major industrial center. It's the center, for example, of Ukraine's gas turbine industry. It's where the big jet engines and the helicopter engines for the Soviet Union used to be made. It used to produce also engines for Soviet cruise missiles. But there's a lot of other things in Zaporozhye as well. Car factories, all kinds of things. It's one of the key industrial centers of Ukraine, located in the central area of the Dnieper. I've pointed out many times, if the Russians capture these places, it's a terminal blow for Ukraine. And by the way, if the Russians cross the Dnieper in Zaporozhye, then and reach the West Bank, then it's an open road to Odessa itself. It's much easier to advance towards Odessa from that part of Ukraine than it would be if you recaptured Kherson and tried to advance along the coast to Odessa, where there's lots of rivers and streams that could act as obstacles in your way. So this is a massive crisis. And it's one that has, caught up with the Ukrainians and with the West very suddenly. And the Ukrainians don't seem to be able to hold the Russians back there. Further north, the Russians are advancing in Dnipropetrovsk region. According to the Russian media, the most important fortified position the Ukrainians held in Dnipropetrovsk region, a town called Novopavlivka, is about to fall as well. The Russian media are claiming the Russians control around 80% of it. If that is true, and there's less information about what is going on there, then the Russians can advance because, again, there's no major fortified lines or positions or natural obstacles. They can advance all the way along the road, all the way to the city of Dnipro on the Dnieper itself. And that is potentially an even worse crisis than the fall of Zaporozhye city would be. Then we come to Pokrovsk. And here we're getting lots of media spin. The Ukrainians are still claiming they're making big counterattacks and are successful, and they are infiltrating their troops into Pokrovsk itself, and that there's a battle going on in Pokrovsk. I don't think anybody who's followed the battle closely has any belief in any of that. The Ukrainians have spun this story many times. I remember how a couple of months ago, for example, they were claiming that they'd recaptured a town called Toretsk after the Russians had captured it. They did send raiding parties in Toretsk, and they did produce some videos there, but it all turned out to be basically PR again. I think it's exactly the same with Pokrovsk. In fact, according to the Russians, they are methodically clearing Pokrovsk. Two of the big micro districts, the two biggest micro districts, are now under Russian control, and the Russians are apparently clearing the remainder. And in Mirnograd, where the Ukrainian army, the bulk of the Ukrainian troops and the Pokrovsk Mirnograd conurbation are located, in Mirnograd, the Ukrainians are tightly surrounded, and most of Mirnograd is apparently now again also under Russian control. Further east and north, reports are, and apparently these are coming also from the Ukrainians themselves, that the Russians have captured perhaps half, perhaps more, of the fortified town of Siversk, which is a major fortified position that the Ukrainians had in northern Donbass. It was basically the outer defenses of the key town of Slavyansk. The other place that the Russians are apparently now also fighting in is Liman. It looks as if that part of the front line is collapsing. And some are saying that Siversk also is about to fall. So the whole military situation on the ground is catastrophic. It's not bad. it's catastrophic. And as you rightly said, getting worse every day. And of course, the Russians in the meantime continue to pound Ukraine regularly with missiles and drones. The energy system is in crisis. The industrial sector is in a point of collapse. And of course, Ukraine is in a deep financial hole with tax revenue collapsing and budget spending exploding. So unless they get their 140 billion euro loan or something like that from the European Union, by February, we could very easily see a hyperinflation crisis developing in Ukraine too. So that's the overall situation.
Yeah, that loan, if they do get it, it is going to last them 6 months. Exactly. The European Union says 2 years. They're going to burn through that money in 6 months. And Absolutely. We all know what the bulk of that money is going to go to or who it's or where it's going to go. Well, exactly. And I'll tell you right now, it's not going to go. A lot of that money is not going to go to Ukraine. But anyway, that's a separate video. Yeah. Kallas, the top diplomat of Europe, said in a statement that the narrative that Ukraine is losing on the front lines is false. Yeah. We've had Ukraine parliament members and I believe some military officials also make statements that that Ukraine losing is false.
Yes.
The situation, as you said, in Pokrovsk is not catastrophic. And actually, Ukraine is pushing back and making very effective counteroffensive operations. Why the delusion? Do you think this is real? Do you think they actually, my first question to you is, do you think they actually believe it? Okay, maybe Kaya Kallas does actually believe it. but do you think that, for example, the military officials in Ukraine or the parliament members that are coming out with these statements or other U.S. officials, neocons, et cetera, that are saying, no, Ukraine is not losing. It's all false. Do you think they actually believe that? Or they're just trying to con everybody? And then why? Why do they want to con everybody? Why the delusion about the military situation?
It's an excellent question, actually. First of all, I think that there are still a few brave people who do want to believe it, who believe it because they want to believe it. I mean, Kaya Kallas obviously wants to believe it. Others want to believe it too, because they've constructed their entire understanding of the conflict on that. On the assumption that Ukraine is winning, that Ukraine must win, that the Russians are incompetent, ineffective, that their economy is the size of Italy's or smaller, that and for them suddenly to admit to themselves that all of that is wrong would be to basically admit that their entire worldview is wrong. So there are some people like that still. That number is shrinking every day. But the major reason why these narratives are being promoted is because they want to stop the negotiating process from proceeding. They want to say, look, the Americans are pushing this urgently because they say that Ukraine is going to lose. It faces an imminent prospect of collapse. The Russians are saying that, but the Russians are lying. Of course they must be lying. So we don't need to negotiate with the Russians and we don't need to make concessions about Ukraine at all. And that's why they continue to claim these false things. What they say is instead, what we really need to do is we got the Russians on the ropes. So let's escalate even further. Let's increase sanctions. Let's supply or deploy Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine. All we need to do is that. And then the Russians will capitulate and come to the table and we will dictate terms. So that's why they are pretending that the situation is under control. Now, when the point will finally come, when they acknowledge that this is no longer true, that remains to be seen. Maybe when the Russians reach Zaporozhye, but sometimes I wonder with some people whether it would take the Russians to actually capture Kiev itself before they will accept the reality.
I wonder if even then they would accept the reality. After the reality of Pokrovsk sets in, after the Russian Ministry of Defense announces the capture of Pokrovsk and Mirnograd. What's next? Slavyansk, Kramatorsk, and that's it, right?
Yes, I mean, that's it. I mean, I think the first thing to happen after Pokrovsk's Mirnograd fall, the next place which will fall, and very quickly, is Konstantinovka, which is the city immediately to the east, which is, by the way, bigger than Pokrovsk. And then basically all you have left are Slavyansk and Kramatorsk, and they will be encircled. And this is going to be a major test for what the Ukrainians do, because if Pokrovsk, Konstantinovka, and a town to the north of Slavyansk called Izium are captured by the Russians, and everybody can see that Izium is now very much a target. In fact, one of the Russian commanders who was reporting to Putin disclosed that he refers to his forces as fighting in the Izium direction, which tells you that Izium is absolutely a Russian objective. Anyway, if all of these places fall, Konstantinovka, Pokrovsk, Izium, Chasiv-Yar has, of course, already fallen, Konstantinovka about to fall, all of these places fall, then if the Ukrainians try to defend Slavyansk, Kramatorsk, they will be surrounded and we will have the biggest cauldron of the war by far. And then we would be justified in making comparisons with Stalingrad.
Wow. All right. We will end the video there. TheDuran.locals.com. We're on X, Telegram, and Rumble. We are also on Substack. And go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch. The links are in the description box down below. Take care.